this is the Eli Steele Show. And tonight we have a special guest who will be joining us shortly. And his name is Arthur Canegas. And I'll be talking to him very soon. In the meantime, I hope everybody is doing well. And we'll be discussing my words.
This is Arthur Canegas.
Yeah, hello. How are you, Arthur?
Good. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah. Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Arthur?
Yes, I do.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
I hear
okay.
you, Leo. How you doing?
Good. Okay. I'm glad you. I'm sorry that for some reason she gave you my landline to call rather as opposed to my cell phone, because the landline is where is the Skype situation, and that's what links me to the show. So I just wanted to clarify that. But
okay.
I introduced you. But Arthur Canegas, I'm hoping I pronounced that right. Is that correct? Canegas?
I can accept that lots of pronunciations. Canegas is okay, but actually Canegas is how I pronounce it.
Canegas.
Arthur
okay.
Canegas.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah, that's
but,
all right. Kind of like,
any pronunciation
is like,
okay with me.
That's all right. Arthur Canegas. All right. Well, you're the director of the latest documentary. It's My World is My Country. A historical look at the
that
first...
It's not world. It's the world
that?
Is my country. The world.
Oh, this is
the world,
is
my
country.
Country.
Okay, I messed that one up. Okay,
not my,
the
world.
Historical. That's all right. Historical look at the world's first citizen, Gary Davis, and the pacifist movement, which began in 1953. That was amazing. The documentary will air on PBS in April. Now, is that going to be through the whole month of April, or is that
okay? Now, all right. Now, wait a minute. Let me just ask you, so will our podcast be by Skype, and now this is a preliminary call, and then we're going to have one that's live on the air? Or
no,
how
we
does
are
this
live.
Work?
No, we are live now, okay?
Oh, we're live now. Okay.
Right, we're live now.
All right, sorry about that.
It's audio. No, my podcast is audio only, but they use the Skype, Skype is the network. One of the network's connections,
perfect.
That's it,
Okay,
I've always done the show this way, but it's like the, Eileen, your publicist, who I've known for 20 years now, she kind of reversed the numbers on her confirmation. So.
No problem. No problem.
That's
well,
okay.
then, so let
That's
me just
okay.
say
least,
that to answer your question, I can jump right in if you don't mind to answer your question.
No,
since,
please go right ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
What's happening is the film
The World is My Country is going out on on PBS affiliates, public broadcasting service, not the PBS national that goes out everywhere at the same time. It's gone out from NETA to... It's NETA has sent it out to all the television stations in the country, and so far it's on in many, many markets around the country, like 41, but it's not automatic that every station runs it. But what happens is the stations that are running it, that we're getting a lot of excitement and buzz about it. It's going to be, if you go to theworldismycountry.com/publictv, a lowercase PUBLICTV, you'll see the list of all the stations that have already scheduled it, and there are schedules at different times on different stations all through April and actually continuing on after that, May, June, and so on. And you'll also find on that page where people, if they don't see it in their market, ways that they can help sponsor local broadcasts in their area. So this is a wonderful opportunity for people to see not just the problems of the world, but a key possible solution, amazing story of Gary, we can shift the world.
That's an interesting thing that you mentioned about how you. I'm trying to think of how we could connect your movie. If I, how can I connect your movie to a movie theater in this area that I believe will take your movie, the show?
We would love to have it on a theater there. And what you can do is you can simply email me. You've got my email through Eileen. And let's talk about the particular theater and how to do it. And we have had a couple of theatrical showings, and we're very open to doing that. So we would love to have it on various theaters around the country. And we have a theatrical version. The theatrical version is 83 minutes long. We had to compress it down to 58 minutes for public television because that's the time slot they're off.
1 hour,
But actually, the full film is actually even far more fascinating and fun. We get standing ovations when we showed it at film festivals. We've had standing ovations, sold out houses, and people are ready for a film like this that inspires them to a new vision of how we can fix our world.
Well, I think we would have a very warm reception for something like that here. And when I read about it, and I haven't seen the whole documentary because of the preview. I was just sent a few previews, but it's fascinating. I never heard of Gary Davis, and I'm sure a lot of people haven't who have asked who are about my age, which are definitely baby boomers. And I was kind of ashamed that I did not know about this guy, the world citizenship thing. You know, I've been doing progressive radio for 20 years, and for some reason, this name has not been bannered around that much. Maybe more so in European countries, but
yes, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's one of the most common reactions we get. People say, wow, I can't believe this. I didn't know this story. And I don't know if you want me to tell you briefly what the story is, but it's something that did rivet people, especially in Europe. You want me to tell you briefly what the story is and why it was so riveting?
Yes, sure, please.
Okay.
I'm aware of what it is, but I...
But as far as your viewers,
the guy was a madman. There's no question about it. There was a radical from radical land. You know,
well,
amazing.
What he did? Okay, so here's this guy. He's Danny Kaye's understudy on Broadway. He's pulling off all those Danny Kaye double talk numbers, wowing audiences, getting 13 curtain calls, and boom, it's World War II, and he finds himself in an airplane bombing the city of Brandenburg, and his own brother is killed in the war, and he's heartbroken. Why in the heck am I killing these people in their homes and schools and factories for no other reason than they're on the wrong side of some invisible line? Why weren't the people who killed my brother arrested? Why wasn't I arrested for murdering all these people? And this sends him on a quest to figure out, oh, my God, what can I do? And he finally discovers this incredible book, Emery Lovins, Emery Reeves, that inspires him to realize that Anatomy of Peace, that inside countries with one government, we don't fight wars, but outside governments, outside our own group, we say, okay, that's the enemy. Then it's okay to do anything we want. He says, my God, in every single country on the world, it's illegal to murder people. But you step outside borders, and it's not illegal. All of a sudden, you get medals for it. You can murder thousands of people. It's not a crime.
Yeah, and you can murder as many as you want. You know, for it. Right? Wow.
So he says, this is seriously broken. I got to do something about it. But what can I do? You know, I'm just an actor. I mean, I was here to make people laugh. I'm not a politician. Didn't go to law school. So he comes up with an ingenious idea. He goes to Paris, where the UN is meeting that year, and he goes to the UN. And he officially gives up national citizenship and offers himself to the new United Nations as their first world citizen. Well, this kind of rivets war-weary Europe, and Albert Camus, André Sartre, Albert Einstein, all these people rally to his cause, and together they put together this little conspiracy, this little act of political theater. They sneak into the UN session back then wearing, fedoras and overcoats and not being recognized, people like Albert Camus, who would be well known if he was recognized. And at one point, Gary then goes out to the front, interrupts the entire United Nations session. This is when the Soviets are squabbling and they're arguing over the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And the Soviets are saying, you know, yet this is an invasion on our civil liberties. This is the West trying to dominate. They're all fighting back and forth like little kids.
Right,
so he
jumps up
and he says, the nations you represent divide us and lead us to the brink of total war. He said, we need one government for one world. And if you won't do it, step aside and a People's World Assembly will arise from our ranks to do it. Well, you know, the delegates actually applaud him. You see this. There's actually film footage of this, amazing footage of all these things.
I saw that.
And
yeah, I saw that. It was amazing.
Yeah, so delegates are applauding him. You saw that. All these famous people get excited about it. And 20,000 people rally with him on the UN doorstep on December 9th. And the very next day, after this huge outpouring of public support, the Soviets, who had been adamantly blocking the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, step aside, abstain, and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is passed unanimously. And that's just the beginning of the story. It keeps going on, even elevated. More and more exciting things happen in this incredible story that's, I would call it, a lost piece of history because, Martin Sheen introduces it as a roadmap to a better future. It's kind of a lost piece of history that if we learn this history, it gives us a roadmap to building a better future for all of us. And so Gary was incredibly ahead of his time, and we want to save that lost piece of history by getting this movie out widely. It's an important story that the world needs to know and doesn't yet know.
Now, why did it take, he passed away, in 2013, I think, right?
In 2013, 2013.
Yeah, 2013,
just
2 weeks.
2 weeks after we finished the documentary, finished the first rough cut, and we showed it to him. It was before we had all the incredible historic footage and everything, but we finished him telling his story on stage, and he got to see that, and he felt so relieved. He said, "You have everything you need from me." And 2 weeks before he died, he issued a world passport. He you'll see in the movie that he started issuing world passports to all these Nobel leaders, presidents, and stateless refugees, helping them get out of refugee camps and everything. Anyway, he issued a world passport to Edward Snowden and had a lot of news about him. He'd been here in the U.S. because that was when Snowden was locked away at the Russian airport.
Oh, yeah.
He couldn't move.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Gary sent him this world passport. And 2 weeks after that, he passed away. So that was his last act, his last hurrah for world citizenship. At an incredible 65 years of his 92 years life, he lived as a citizen of no nation, only the entire planet. And the press back then in Paris, they dubbed him World Citizen Number One.
Yeah, yeah. No, they loved him there. It seemed like they just loved him. But what's the, what was your friendship with him? How did you develop the desire to do this?
Yep.
And did you have a long friend? And the second thing, since he's from Burlington, Vermont, living there, He must have been buddies with Bernie Sanders, no?
Yes, Bernie, he did talk to Bernie Sanders a number of times. I wouldn't call them buddies. I think Bernie Sanders saw him, as a lot of people did at that point, as kind of an interesting gadfly. He would come up at meetings and talk about world citizenships and so on. And I knew him for a quarter of a century, and I liked his idea about world citizenship and the world passport. But I never knew he had such an amazing story. I was actually working on developing a feature film that would take kids into a positive future and give us a model, something to aspire to, of what would a better world look like. And I was getting this up to Sony Pictures and others. And then we weren't getting the funding for it. And I went with Gary's son, Troy Davis, to try to talk to some Silicon Valley executives about helping fund that. And Troy said, you know, if you want to make a film about peace, why don't you read my dad's book, My Country is the World? Well, I read the book, and I was blown away. I said, this is so cinematic. It's filled with action, adventure, and everything. I've got to make a movie about this. So I started out writing a screenplay, winning some awards in it, getting it up to Sony Pictures that loved it, until they budgeted it and found out it was a $55 million film with all the scenes of him being shot down in airplanes and big stage numbers. And they said, you know, he's not well enough known for a blockbuster movie. And that's when I decided to do the documentary instead. Fortunately, just in time to get the whole story out before he passed away.
Wow. Oh, that's good. I'm glad he was able to see it, or at least the parts of it that made it.
Yeah, he saw his part of it, his whole story put together, but it didn't yet have all that incredible historical footage you saw in the film. I was blown away when I actually found footage of every part of his journey. Here's a story nobody heard of, and the film,
Where did you find this stuff?
We had film researchers at the Library of Congress. We had film researchers in Paris going through their archives. We had film researchers at UCLA. We had film, and like UCLA called us. They said, well, Gary Davis, we've got some can down here in the basement, Gavin Gust. It has the name Gary Davis. We don't even know if it's the same Gary Davis. It'll cost you $1,000 just for us to digitalize it so you can see it. You can't even see this footage. It might be the wrong Gary Davis. You got to pay $1,000 to see it. So we said, okay. We paid our $1,000, and that turned out to be that footage. I don't know if you saw this, but there's footage when he was stuck on the border between France and Germany for two months, trying to go to Germany to rebuild the damage he had caused with his bombs. His place burned down there and he had to go back to the U.S., he's on this ship. And he's coming into the harbor, going past the Statue of Liberty, having a press conference. And the press asked him, are you going to continue your world citizen movement in the U.S.? And he says, my movement. I'm just one of the world citizens in the community of world citizens. And he says, he's very humble, as you'll see in the movie. But that great footage, it was so pristine, there's not a scratch on that film. You know, mostly you see this old footage, and it's got little scratches and all. This has never been played since it was filmed.
I didn't see that in the. There wasn't in the promotional trailers and stuff that I was sent.
We'll get you the link. You know, the full film, the full theatrical film, is on Vimeo pay-per-view. The World Is My Country.
People can
watch the entire story there. You'll see, and I can send you a private link because, you know, you're doing this podcast, and you get to see the full film and get it there into your local theater. That would be fantastic.
That's what I was thinking. Because this is something I would think would be very, very real up here. People might become very interested in this. And I'm also doing a number of different projects with that movie house, on my own documentaries and whatnot.
Tell me about your documentaries.
I've done 12 of them. I had a television show for about 10 years, and it's called the LA Steel Show. It was a cable access program, but it went through the whole state of Connecticut and parts of Massachusetts. I had a lot of affiliates, and I did two major documentaries on the DC 2003 and 2005 peace rallies down there, a lot of great footage there, and it was about an hour and a half, about two 90-minute documentaries there. Then I did a five-part series, which was on a nuclear power here in Connecticut, where they had shut down this Dominion. Well, Dominion owns it now, but they had shut down the nuclear power plant in Waterford, Connecticut. And they were, you know, it was a group of people that I was involved with who I filmed and questioned, and we did all kinds of stuff together there. They actually got the nuclear power plant closed for 5 years.
Our kind of person. We're really glad to have you share our film ideas and and get together. That's good.
Because I've got so much of them, and I've got 400 shows actually that I recorded, and some of them about 40 of them up on YouTube, on a YouTube channel.
Good.
But actually, that one is that one of the power plant documentaries on there, I don't know, just a whole bunch of hotspots programs that I did. That 12 of them. I did one on the 911 commission. I did one on I'm trying to remember all of them, but. I can send you that YouTube link. You might want to get a kick out of that.
Sure.
But I did a lot of investigative stuff as well, and touched on a lot of major issues. And we did. I was a political activist for 20 years with Progressive Radio. I was probably one of the few progressive radio shows in the country that join the war, join the Afghanistan and Iraq war, and we were major protesters there. But anyway, I just want I'll give you links and so on and so forth with that, but I'd like to talk a little more about this. Where we can go with this. My world is the world is my country.
The guy was a fascinating
character. Yeah, there's one guy that I just for the hell of it. In 2002, I was the only guy, the campaign manager for a remarkable guy that his name was Ned Cole, and he ran for governor in 2002 against Roland, this guy Roland, who was our governor, who wound up being corrupt and served jail time. And Ned was running against him on a corruption charge. Ned was actually in 1972, he was an actual Democratic candidate for president, okay? And
sure.
He was up there with Shirley Chisholm and George McGovern. And,
cool. I did a show for George McGovern called McGovern 72, A Public Plan for Peace. And I knew George McGovern. He actually lived about two blocks from me for a while there in Washington, D.C., and I went to his apartment on. He's a cool guy. Wonderful person.
I was 18 in 1972, and He was the first guy voted for president, and of course that was a landslide victory the other way, but we got the first Trump,
I think the key that Gary gave us that was so inspiring is a way to kind of rise above all this politics and the nations that divide us. One of the things that Robert Mueller's widow, you'll see her at the end, Barbara Mueller, he was the undersecretary, deputy undersecretary of the UN, and she said that, Gary inspired him on his mission, but one of the things that, and that he inspired the leaders of the European Union, but one of the things that that her husband said was that there is a superpower in the world that is like a sleeping superpower, and that superpower is the people of the world. And what happens is because we're divided into these boxes called nation states, we don't recognize our power. They can control us. They can say, if you try to control our pollution, if you try to tax us, we'll go to another country. And so they're all operating freely at the world. All these corporations, they operate globally. But we, the people, are locked in these cages called nation states. So we can't control them, and they control us. They become the puppet masters instead of, as it was in Thomas Jefferson's day, where corporations got a 20-year license from the people, basically. And if they didn't do the didn't serve the public interest, it got withdrawn, they became the ones on top running us. And people try to push them back in the box, push the genie down, say, okay, we got to control, corporate contributions to campaigns and all this. But it can't be done, because as long as we're locked in the box and they're out there roaming free, and they have all the power and money. But once we, the people, connect together and create what Gary called a synergistic democracy, it's not win-lose, I win, you lose. It's a whole new invention for how, in like something like these little Zoom groups we're having all over the world, people all over the world are in these little groups that he called synergy groups, and they're not voting, for this or that. They're getting together and saying, and they're cross-culture, like it's Arabs and Israelis in the same one and so on. And the more cross-cultural people come together and say, how can we solve these problems of the world? And they come up with solutions. Those solutions get integrated together and amalgamated into the will of the people globally. And what Gary was suggesting is that if we can just, everybody says the will of the people, even the Declaration of Independence says the right of the people to institute new government, and the Universal Declaration says that the will of the people should be the basic authority of government. And all the constitutions say that. Instead of we the people just begging and pleading our government leaders to make peace, we just go out and do it, and we create the most powerful superpower in the world, the will of the people globally. It doesn't need armies or militaries to force things. It's got people power.
JFK, the guy was a visionary. There's no question about that. But with his Peace Corps, and VISTA programs and so on and so forth, he opened the doors to the world, to Americans, people, to see what the world really was,
absolutely. You're absolutely right. And President Kennedy said, every man, woman, and child lives under a nuclear sword of Damocles, capable of being cut at any moment by accident, by miscalculation, or design. He said, the weapons of war must be abolished before they abolish us. And actually, they're well on the way to abolishing us. They're well on the way to abolishing us unless we break out of this nation-state box and claim our power to be able to take back our planet and save our world. Because, this is Earth Month, and it's crucial that we save the world from environmental destruction. But even more, if we had a limited nuclear war, just like between India and Pakistan, that would throw so much soot into the air that would cause such global warming, there'd be massive starvation. We could destroy the world with one little...
Look at Fukushima. Look at what the hell that did. I mean, that has polluted, that has irradiated one-third of the Pacific Ocean already. And they're dumping more stuff in there constantly because they don't know what to do with it. And that's
absolutely.
That's tiny
compared to a nuclear war. That's tiny, and even a small nuclear war would do us in.
I don't know if it's a third, but right now, I mean, it was a third of the Pacific Ocean now is irradiated, and there are hundreds and maybe even thousands of miles of dead zones throughout the Pacific area.
It's absolutely crucial that we come together to save our world, and that's why Albert Einstein said about Gary Davis. Considered this one of the smartest men ever. He said that Gary grasped the key to whether humanity, whether he said mankind back in those days, but today we say humanity, whether humanity will die by its own hands or continue to exist. And, if Albert Einstein said that, then I think all of us ought to see this film and see, what does this guy have to say that Einstein thought could help save our world? So.
I loved the heroics. I loved the heroics of this guy. I mean, he just went after it, and people just, saw him for what he was, and he hit him, and especially in Europe, in that post-war period, when they were just starting to figure out what their boundaries were, Then he comes along and just blows it all up, you know.
Absolutely.
And then he started the world. What was it? The free
World Service Authority. World Cities. Yeah, the World Cities around the world.
Yeah.
And also, there are a whole bunch of cities, over 1,000 now, declared themselves world cities, like the state of Minnesota declared themselves that, the city of Minnesota. Other cities back then, there was a time where they all declared themselves world cities. And Gary founded the World Service Authority in Washington, D.C., that's been issuing world passports to world IDs and documents all based on the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
And they're accepting them. Which is,
they were accepted and stamped by 183 of the world's, about 193 nations in the UN. So they were accepted by those people in the past. Right now, after 9/11 and with the current border divisions, it's getting practically impossible to travel with it. But it is still used by so many people. Like if people even get to this country, for instance, and want to go for an asylum at a courthouse, they can't even get into the courthouse without an ID. So sometimes lawyers help them get a world passport so they can at least get into the courthouse to make their case. And, so many ways it helps people. Many people in many places, so many people are stateless, and they can't even get their kids into school or get vaccinated or get other things without identification or medical treatment. So the world ID documents can help them. So if you do go to our webpage, theworldismycountry.com, and click on World Passport, you can get more information on that. And if you click on the store, you can find out how to watch the full theatrical version and get your World Citizen T-shirts and whatnot. So I hope everybody will come join us and help everyone learn about this powerful story and how they can be a part of getting it out in their community.
No, it's great. I'm trying to phrase this right. But I had never heard of Gary Davis before, to be frank, and I feel embarrassed by that because the guy was quite. He only passed away in 2013. So, nobody else that I interviewed many people, and all of the had everybody from. Hundreds of people and of celebrities and none of them. I remember even a guy I had Lou Grant. Who played Lou Grant? Ed Asner. Thank you. I had Ed Asner. That was at a time when during the war he came out and he was very anti-war and he made a lot of enemies.
Right, I remember that.
And I had him on the show and he never really spoke about one world or borderless boundaries. He was just basically anti-war,
Right.
Nobody. I mentioned him, but I had others like. Jesse Jackson and Ramsey Clark and others that should they never brought up the significance of world borders and their anti-war pitches.
What you say is so important, crucial, and I think that what happens is that like Ed Asner. Everybody knows what we're against. We're against war. We're against climate injustice.
Yeah,
we're against all the things we're against. But we don't have a model now for what we're for. And that's why I think this film's so important, because it inspires people with a vision of what we can be for. And without that vision of what we can be for, without vision, the people perish. But with vision, we really can come together and have the power to change our world. So. That's why I hope everybody comes and goes to our website, sees the movie, and helps get it either watch. It gets a big audience for the public TV broadcasts that are going on in their area, or looks at the directions there about how they can help encourage it in the areas that haven't yet scheduled it for broadcast.
No, I think that I would like to see it. If you could send me the actual link, and what I'll do is then I can bring it to the theater and have them look at it.
Right,
knowing knowing that this is how you are promoting it as well, I'd be proud to do
right.
it. I'd love to be able to present that.
Excellent.
And I think we could do that. It's an ideal situation. It's a nice theater, and they just changed hands. But the whole idea behind that particular theater was the guy who started it a number of years ago was for not only for blockbusters and everything, you know, like in normal movies, but also for to bring in the communities and to bring in documentaries and to bring in new things, even involved with the high schools, their programs of
fabulous.
Cinema and so on.
Yeah, we're also
kind of
developing.
I'm sorry.
We're developing a program for high schools with public TV. We're also developing a module for educational programs about Gary's story, so that young people can hear about this important story. So that's
I think they should.
You mentioned classrooms
absolutely.
Just coming too.
I mean, I used to teach, and I tell you, I was always astonished at how little was actually taught in high school.
Right. You're absolutely right.
I was so amazed that seniors in high school who were already 18 or 17, 18 years old. Really had the vaguest notion of what voting was about or what... basic civics. I mean, even the Constitution, you know. And I was just floored by their lack of preparation at the age of that age, senior. And being that, I just was amazed. And then I found out, because at that time I was very political. I was on radio and television, and I just couldn't believe how inadequate our social studies and academics really are right up to that high school level.
Right.
And I can understand why so many kids drop out, because they go, what the hell? You know, what am I listening? What am I
right.
doing here? You know, I could be working. You
right.
And,
exactly.
And
they don't really make education. You know, I used to, for instance, hate history when we were first taught. You know, you have to memorize this war after that war after that war. You know, who needs it?
Yeah.
But then I had a history teacher who really got into like some of the original documents and like the documents that were pro-slavery and against, and you got to read
right.
the original
right.
Documents of the
right.
people who were for slavery, who said, look, you people in the North are preaching this, but you've got these industrial factories that are treating your people a lot worse than we're treating our slaves. And there was a debate back and forth, and you saw, you know, it's
exactly.
not just, oh, here's the good guys, here's the bad guys. There are people on each side have their points of view, and that got me excited about history. I realized, wow, history is alive and dynamic. But before that, I thought it was just about all these dead people getting killed in wars, you know?
That's right.
So you're absolutely
right.
We need a living history.
I think what I'll tell you quite frankly, I was always a history buff, but when I went to college, I majored in history and eventually got a BA. But I went to a community college first. It was right in the city, Hartford, Connecticut, and met some of the most amazing people. Especially in the history department, and I met a guy named Yano Deci. He was he had four doctorate degrees, and the guy he was a Columbia University professor, right? At the time, and he was teaching European history, and at the time, and he left there, joined the Colombian riots, Colombia riots, which what's his name, our former attorney general, was a part of, Obama's attorney general. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
John Kerry, are we talking about, or who are we talking about?
No, I'm talking about Obama. No, his attorney general was Holder, Eric Holder.
And
Eric Holder was one of the center's, one of the, he was the president or something of the, the group that took over the faculty building in Columbia University. Students for Democratic Society, SDS, remember that?
Oh, yeah, right, Tom Hayden and all those people.
Yeah.
SDS, right.
Holder was one of them, right? And these people, and the reason I say that is because that was a time when this guy was fed up with him. He was a tenured professor, right? And he just was fed up, and his friend was the president of this community college that was starting up in Hartford, and he invited him to be a professor there. And I'll tell you, this guy turned out, he was a Hungarian officer during the Hungarian Revolution, and he was actually decorated with a, his body was sent back to Hungary to be decorated as a national hero, to have been taught by him, but to have been his aide during the 2 years I was there, the man taught me more than I could imagine and gave me an appreciation for history. And I moved on to the university, and then we came in history and journalism and so on. But it became something that was eye-opening to me. And not too many people have that chance to tutor under a brilliant historian, you know.
A good historian really brings it to life as a story, his and her story, her story and historian. We need both stories and all these key stories. At one point, my cousin and I started a thing called the Endangered Story Act, and it was, if we don't preserve these stories like Gary's that are so well known, then they'll become extinct. If we hadn't made this movie, nobody'd even know who Gary Davis was. But the word endangered also includes the word end angered. And if you look at the word, it's interesting. End angered spells endangered. And we need to end some of these angered stories that keep people, your ancestors killed my ancestors, so we're going to kill you, more of you, and blow you up. And, like in the Middle East, we see these wars going on for centuries and so on. And we need to end those angered stories and have life-affirming stories that help us on the planet make it. And that's why I was so compelled to make this film about Gary Davis, because it's a film that really can inspire us all.
Yeah. What was his take on the Middle East anyway? I mean, and the wars during these last 20 years?
Well, Gary wrote 10 books, and one of them is called World Citizen in the Holy Land. And he went to Israel, he traveled only on his world passport, and he had a lot of challenges at borders. So somehow he got into Israel, but they were kicking him out. You can't stay here. You don't have a right to stay here. So he went to Jordan. He gets on this bus and goes to Jordan. And he gets to Jordan, and they look at his world pass. Say, well, we can't accept this. You got to go back. So he asked the Israelis, can I get a visa to come to Israel? No way. So he asked the Jordanian guy, he says, where does Jordan end? And the guy said, what do you mean, where does Jordan end? He said, well, if that's Israel on the other side of the river, and this is Jordan, where's the line? He said, well, there, middle of the bridge. So Gary goes to the middle of the bridge, sets down his backpack, and sits down on the sidewalk on the side of the bridge. And the Jordanian comes by running up and says, well, you can't stay here. And the Israeli guy comes running up from the other side. You can't stay here. And Gary says, why not? And they say, well, you just can't stay here. It's getting dark. And Gary says, well, don't you think I know that? Yeah, but at nighttime, that's when we shoot at each other. And Gary said, do you hear yourselves? During the day, you cooperate letting people cross this bridge, and at night, you shoot at each other? He says, take off your uniforms, throw down your guns, and join me on this line. It's the only free place on the planet. So he had a lot of great experiences around the world, in the Middle East and other places. And his whole idea was that, you know, nation states aren't real. You know, he was flying in his airplane. And he said, you know, I don't speak Germany, France, and everything. I fly over some invisible lines. I can murder people. On the other side, I can't. You know, this is insane. Yeah. It's not real, but this is all made up, folks. And if we made up this system, we can make up a better system. You know, he said, cities, they're real. I mean, there really is. You can look at that from some planet from outer space, and you can see the cities all lit up. And so that's why he started that World Cities movement, for cities to declare themselves as world cities, and then cities to get together and help govern the world. And there's a whole movement. There's a book called If Mayors Governed the World, and there's a TED Talk about it and so on. But, you know, he said, let's be real, folks. Let's get away from these broken nation states that are political fictions, and let's get to the reality that everybody in the world has needs and wants that are similar. We all want a peaceful and better world. We found a way to make things sort of function in cities. Cities have overcome incredible obstacles. You know, we just have to realize that we don't have to send people off in a horse and buggy to meet force. We can in a room, like we had to do in 1776. Today we can invent a new form of government where we all meet together in the global room. The internet gives us that capability, and we can come together and create the world we choose.
No, that's amazing. No, I was. I think what amazes me is, it always did, is how we. So I mean, even myself, I go back. I've got archives on my. If you go to my blog, it's lasteelshow.org. I go back to 2004 when I started. That was when I started that website. And I got the archives going. Mm-hmm. It's going all the way back there by the year and month. But I go back, and I can't even believe I things I had already forgotten that were so significant then. You know what I mean? Mm. And it shows, like, I've done 1,350 programs on this network, and another 500 on radio shows on mm-hmm. FM. But these were all we forget. I myself easily forget what we were talking about back then and how significant it was back then. And you know, we're talking about the thing came up today. I was talking to a friend of mine, and we were discussing different things, but then he was saying, well, what about Biden's new $2 trillion and this and that? And he said, well, how the hell are we going to pay for that? And I told the guy, I said, look, you know, back in 08 or 09, I believe it was 2009 when Obama was trying to bail out the world, world banks, and what he did, the Federal Reserve actually coughed up $53 trillion with a T, to bail out all the friggin' world banks, okay? And eventually they would pay us back. But this was reported, and I quoted it in my book, actually, Naked at the Mic, but in sight of the article, but it was done by Financial Times, came out, and they were the first disclosure of that $53 trillion.
Wow.
All right?
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, man.
Did they ever pay it back?
They did. Supposedly they did. Of course, nobody, you know, nobody has verified it, and if they ever did or not. But you got to remember one thing too. the major recipients of that $53 trillion were the same eight banks that were involved with the Federal Reserve. Now, does that make sense?
And that caused the problem in the first place. The ones that caused the problem in the first place got the big reward.
So what they did is they stole $53 trillion from the American people, taxpayers, okay, sent it out to the rest of the world, okay, at 0% interest or 1% interest or some sort, you know what I mean? And, you know, but that it's coming back and with no real incentive for them to pay it back, right? Other than to keep the world from collapsing, you know, and since we are 51% of the World Monetary Fund, okay, we imagine that, you know, who's getting all the money around the world? Where and I think what pisses me off so much and why I so like the Bernie's proposals was that, you know, we're paying all of the world to have, you know, health coverage, all the world to have whatever, you know, socialized everything. And yet we're the only country in the world that, you know, is rejecting socialism, you know what I mean? So, democratic socialism, as it will. And I was always offended by our, the foolishness. The foolishness that we, as a country and taxpayers, have, you know, we can't.
Absolutely,
you know, we can't. You know, we can spend $3 trillion at the drop of a hat on a war, all right? But we can't spend $3 trillion on you know, getting food and jobs and infrastructure or whatever else for this country.
Right,
it's insanity.
Absolutely, yeah, you know, it's crazy. It is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's an insanity and. And we need to wake up from it and realize how we're trapped in this box and we get fooled by the propaganda that keeps us there and keeps us divided.
Absolutely.
And by keeping us divided and building walls and saying, you know, oh, it's the immigrants that are the bad guys or it's this guy or that guy, that keeps us all divided so we don't recognize our power. And once we break out of that box and we get together and really connect around the world, we'll find that we have similar goals and wants all the world. People want the same things. They want safer world for the future, better life for their children, cleaner air, cleaner environment.
Look at
and it's only the broken, only the broken systems that are messing us up. We got to get beyond them.
Well, look at those poor wretches. That, I mean, I call them wretches. They're poor. Thousands and thousands and thousands that are trying to cross the border every day on the southern borders, and I mean, just for the sake of getting, you know, being able to eat, you know, being able to possibly have a life, right? And how desperate they are to do that. I mean, sending their 6 and 7-year-old kids by themselves to the new world, you know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And the key thing we have to look at is what's causing that. And what's causing that is not just, oh, these happen to be messed up countries. The military industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about and these big corporate interests that are operating globally, they've managed to use the U.S. government as their puppet to overthrow all the democratically elected governments in South America that actually would have solved these problems for the people. And they've undermined and destabilized these countries. I made a movie about that, how we undermined Chile and we helped lead to the assassination of President Allende, a democratically elected guy who was making Chile better for all the people, but he wasn't helping ITT, and ITT wanted him out of the area. He was going to take some of the things that they had stolen back for the people, so they got the U.S. government to overthrow this guy.
So here we overthrow all
the progressive government, and now the nations are so messed up that we have desperate refugees coming to our country, and then we say we got to fight to block these refugees, but what caused it? These countries would have all been very functional.
Well,
Take a look at Costa Rica.
Look what these bastards did to Venezuela. I mean, you know, Chavez had the place rocking and rolling. Now, they loved Chavez, okay? And Maduro was his handpicked man, and Maduro had the right idea, but then all of a sudden, Bush Clinton, as well, and everybody else did nothing but beat on them. You know what I mean? And
exactly.
To steal their oil, and you know, you had all these mega oil companies looking for that Venezuelan crude,
right.
You know. And it's like,
right.
Look what they did in Libya. I mean, they destroyed that country.
Absolutely. And then you look in Wikipedia at the overthrow of the Shah of Iran. I mean, it's all came out documented. It isn't myth. You know, the CIA overthrew their government, helped destroy their country to steal their oil, and
yeah,
now we
yeah.
wonder why does Iran hate us? Why do they want to fight a war?
Yeah.
Well, they don't want to fight a war. We screwed them over, and we keep
yeah.
screwing them over. And
yeah.
by we, I don't mean, I really shouldn't say that, because it's not we. The people of the United States wouldn't do that. It's this broken political system. Even the good guys. I think President Obama, you know, really meant what he said. He wanted to make a better world, but he was trapped in a system that Eisenhower described. Eisenhower said that, you know, we must guard against the unwarranted influence of the military-industrial complex. He said it's in every state house, every office of the government, and he said that what can be expected to come from this? The worst is atomic war. The best would be this, a life of perpetual fear and tension, a burden of arms that burdens this country or any country to provide true abundance and well-being for the people of this world. And he said we had to stop this military-industrial complex or it would destroy us. And he's right. We've been all suffering under it. That's why the United States is suffering. All the countries around the world are suffering. Africa, you know, extract all – Africa's the richest country in the world. And we extract all their resources to keep them down. And then we say, oh, look at all those backward people. Maybe we should send them some aid. We don't have to send them aid. We just have to get off their backs and let them come together. Let them have their proper place in the world economy. Let them control their resources. Pay them for those resources.
it's pathetic when you look at these diamond miners. You know what I mean? What they are 4- and 5-year-old children going down into a hole in the ground, right? And maybe with their hands trying to dig up diamonds, you know what I mean? And what are they coming back with? You know, here, Dad, look, I got a diamond. Oh, thanks, son. Okay, I'll get $2 for that. You know what I mean? It's like absurd. A total absurdity.
There's a way we can get beyond that. We don't have to be stuck in that absurdity. And that's why I hope everybody watches this film, because it gives us a vision of how we can come together and build something better. We need to build a better mousetrap. It's it's like Bucky Fuller said, you never change things by fighting things inside the old model. You've got to create a new model and create something better, and everybody will gravitate toward it. And that's what Gary's story was all about, and why I hope everyone will watch it and see how inspiring this is for how we can come together as a world.
I was inspired because of his courage and his commitment and his vision. You know, it just overwhelming to see that. And being an activist, and you seem to have been involved with a lot of it over the years.
Was undefeatable.
Exactly.
Yeah,
they threw
him in 34 jails, and it never bothered him at all. He said, "Oh, this is a great chance. I'll go in there and I'll talk to all these refugees and immigrants in jail and talk about world passports and stuff." He had a great time in jail. It didn't bug him at all.
You know,
no matter what they could do to him,
they
couldn't stop him. They couldn't intimidate him. You know, some of us come out and we look at a scary borderline with all the barbed wire and the arms and the guns, and we're intimidated. He looked at it and he said, "This is a set. You know, I'm an actor, and this is a set. Those are actors in costumes, and their whole role is to try to intimidate us. So I'm not going to play into their game. I'm going to draw them into my game." And he would draw them into his game, and it would drive them crazy. They didn't know what to do with the guy. You know, like I remember, maybe you saw in the movie The Example. There he is in Paris, and he's given up his national citizenship, and the territory of the Palais de Chaillot has been named international territory by the United Nations, and France has officially given a key to the UN declaring it international territory. So when Gary gave up his citizenship, France said, "You got to get out of here. We can't have you here with no papers. We'll throw you in jail if you don't leave." So the day he's supposed to leave, he gets up, goes into this international territory, goes onto the doorstep of the Palais de Chaillot and goes to sleep. Well, in the morning, this cop comes along, this gendarme, and he says, Monsieur, you can't sleep here. And Gary says, I can't leave. I have this document. He shows him this document, refused. They say, sure. He said, if I go back into France, it's illegal. And he said, but you're in France. He said, yes, but it's not France anymore. It's been and he shows him, it's been declared international territory. And he says, if you push me back into France, you'll be guilty of importing an illegal alien, and you'll go to jail. Well, the gendarme backs off. What am I supposed to do? I'm going to get in jail. I got to go get orders. Well, he leaves. All the press descends on him, to Gary. It becomes this huge flurry of international press filming him, talking to him.
I read people around the world.
I read a lot of the
press releases and stuff that that she had put in there, and a lot of fascinating stuff. Very fascinating.
Yeah. So people are going to have fun watching the story because, like you said, he was a guy with a lot of guts. Nobody could intimidate him, and he kept at it right until he died. On his way to the hospice, he's giving the hospice ambulance driver copies of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and talking to him about world citizenship. So he never gave up.
Age 92. Right to the
yep.
end, but no, that's what it
yep.
is, and that's activism, and that's a guy who's got a vision, and goes right to the end of it. And I appreciate you being on tonight, and I'm glad we could discuss this because to my listeners, I guarantee very few probably have heard of Gary Davis, and hopefully they will now and see your show on PBS, local stations, or go to what's the name of your website again? That you
go to
The
World Is My Country. Tom Paine said, "My country is the world," and this is just same thing, but the reverse order. The world is my country. The world is my country, and Tom Paine said, basically, the world is my country and my religion is to do good. All people are my brethren. That's what Gary was kind of inspired by, Thomas Paine's ideas. So he's really like the original founding fathers who raised their citizenship above the separate states that divided them, Virginia, Maryland, and so on, and came together as the United States. And he now inspires young people to come together and create a united world. So, yes, enjoy the movie, theworldismycountry.com. If you add after that /public TV, you'll get to that page, but you can just go and navigate to it too. Go to the tabs and so on, or click on links and you'll get there too. The world is my country.
I will definitely do that. And let me, I will get back to you, regarding that movie theater. And I'd like to be able to review the whole thing and see if I can show it to them and the owners. Maybe we could book it sometime in April
sure.
or May or May or something like that.
Yeah, we can go along with theaters. Usually have a split. They usually have a split. So much goes to them, so much goes to the filmmaker. So, yeah, we would welcome that, and we'd love that, and we're glad to work with you.
Thank you for this chance to talk with you. Well, I'll get back to you. We'll talk on email, or I can call you at this number, or can I reach you at this number? Okay.
Yep, you can. This is my cell. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Send me the link to this show so people can email me the link so we can put it on our website for people to listen to the replays. So, okay. Email me an MP3 file or whatever. Whatever you have, an MP3 file or a link, whatever. Okay.
I'll send you the link to it, okay? So thank you very much,
great.
Arthur.
Okay.
We'll talk again soon. Okay. Good night.
Okay. You have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. That was Arthur Carnegie. Okay. Interesting guy. Arthur Carnegie is his name. Kanegis. And he's the director of the latest documentary on The World Is My Country, as a historical look at the world's first citizen, Gary Davis, and the pacifist movement, which began in 1953, and it'll be aired on PBS in April this year. And we hope to have, we'll talk to Arthur again, a fascinating man. And he's done a number of different movies. So please go to his website, my world, the world is my country, .org, and check it all out. And I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight, and tell your friends, good evening. Have a good night.